If Hollywood has taught me anything.
You're supposed to wait for the music there, buddy. There we go. It's like it's the real thing. It's like it's really happening.
If Hollywood has taught me anything, the murderer is someone in this very room.
And then you say your name.
My name is Kevin Leeson.
This is exactly how it's like every time we record. If everyone will look under your seat, you've won some chewing gum. I'm Torrin Atkinson.
What has 7 heads, 2 doctors, and 20 pounds of bacteria? The answer, and this, is Caustic Soda Live.
Bam! Welcome. Thanks for coming, guys. So, the word origin of live, to live, comes from pre-Indo-European root leap, meaning to remain, continue. The adjective live, meaning in person or performance, first attested in 1934.
Oh.
And extravaganza from 1794, a fantastic type of performance from late 14th century. Middle Latin, extravagantum, originally a word in canon law for uncodified papal decrees.
See,
everyone knows what that is, right?
I just thought it was extravaganzas.
More, you got some vaganzas, and then you got extravaganzas?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's even an even bigger vaganza.
This is not enough vaganza. We need extra.
Oh, and now I've been set straight. Who knew?
I don't know, but calling it an extravaganza, that's a lot of pressure.
Well, I guess we better fucking do a good job then.
Okay.
The present participle of extravagare, meaning wander outside or beyond, from Latin extra, outside of, and vagare, wander or roam.
All right.
And now you know.
Uh-huh.
So this is a follow-ups episode, and my first follow-up is for radiation.
Well, I don't know anything about that. We're going to need somebody to help
us. We will need someone. The original episode was released in April 2010. It was our third episode. We had our first guest, and that guest is in this building right now. That guest is Dr. Rob Tarswell. Come on up. Hey. So we mentioned on our radiation episode, Lewis Slotin. Does anyone remember that?
Yeah, he was the guy who decided to stick a screwdriver in it or something and got bombarded with a
screwdriver in it. Take the screwdriver out of it.
Oh, there you go.
That was the problem.
Uh-huh. The screwdriver going in was fine. The screwdriver coming out was deadly.
Well, what he was doing was he was prying apart 2 parts of a radioactive core and keeping it apart with a screwdriver.
Yeah.
Yeah, that seemed like a good idea.
And that was in 1946. He accidentally created a fission reaction in a plutonium core at the Los Alamos National Laboratory in New Mexico. And this became known as the Demon Core.
Oh, that's cool.
And the reason I'm bringing it up is because we didn't mention that there was already a history.
True.
Before Lewis Slotin's incident. The 14-pound plutonium core, the second fatal incident was with Slotin. The first incident was brought to our attention by Chew on a comment of our website.
Mm-hmm.
And that person was Harry Daglian. Do you know about this guy?
I don't.
He was an Armenian-American physicist with the Manhattan Project, was attempting to build a neutron reflector. Are you with me?
A neutron reflector.
Thank you. Perfect. By manually stacking a series of 4.4-kilogram tungsten carbide bricks in an incremental fashion.
Incremental fashion.
Around the plutonium core. The purpose of the neutron reflector was to reduce the mass required for the plutonium core to attain criticality. Dr. Rob, explain.
Right. So the idea in fission reactors is neutrons bombard the fissile material, and that fission product includes other neutrons. The problem is they have to be going slow enough to interact with neutrons and then spark a future fission reaction. So it's a bit paradoxical. You don't want your neutrons going too fast, or they're not terribly useful. So you've got to slow them down so they become what we call thermal neutrons.
I want a bomb with the slow neutrons. That was a really bad cover of Slow Hands. Oh, I'm sorry. That was terrible.
As he was moving the final brick over the assembly, neutron counters alerted Daglan to the fact that the addition of this brick would render the system super critical. As he withdrew his hand, he accidentally dropped the brick onto the center of the assembly. This caused the core to go critical.
Okay, so I'll bite. What happened to him?
Well, I'll tell you.
No, let me guess.
Okay.
Superpowers, obviously.
For a very limited time.
Yeah.
Daglian panicked after dropping the brick and attempted to knock off the brick without success. He was forced to partially disassemble the tungsten carbide pile to halt the reaction. Daglian was estimated to receive a dose of 510 rem of neutron radiation from a yield of 1,016 fissions. Dr. Rob, explain.
Well, those are old units. So nowadays we measure radiation absorbed dose
in ouches.
In ouches. Actually, he's lucky. Well, he's not lucky. I mean, yeah. I'm amazed he only got 510 rem from neutrons. Are you sure that was rem?
That's what
and not
says.
Rads.
This is the information I received from Wikipedia.
Oh, all right.
Which, as we know, is infallible.
So there's like a 99.3% chance it's accurate.
That's
that
right.
Authoritative source. Because when radiation hits your body, not all radiation has equivalent effects. And what we need to do is multiply the amount of total absorbed energy by what we call the radiation quality factor.
The RQF.
Or the QF.
Oh, okay.
Just denoted as Q. And that gives us a sense of the actual damage to biological systems. So absorbing, say, 1 joule per kilogram, which would be 1 gray, or in that case, say, about 10 rads.
Totally.
If it's neutrons, which would have a quality factor of about 10 gray would be the equivalent of 10 sieverts. Now, if he absorbed, 1 gray would be about 10 sieverts.
Okay. All right.
Which would be a dose that would be fatal within a week.
All right.
So our good friend here absorbed 510 rem.
That's what it says.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's 5.1 SV.
Sievert.
That would be 51.
Oh.
51 sieverts, which would probably be fatal within hours to days. He would probably be unconscious within minutes.
Well, he
or
died.
At least violently barfing within seconds.
Yeah, I'm sure. I don't have the barfing time.
Yeah,
I don't have the
T barf
BTF, the barf time factor. But he did die 25 days later from acute radiation poisoning.
Oh, wow. Oh, the poor bastard.
I do have a correction though. It wasn't 1,016 fissions. It was 10^16. Fissions.
Oh,
that sounds more like
your,
it.
Yeah. Your notes didn't have the uppercase.
Well, 25 days. So he was basically super tough. Right? If he was supposed to die within days, stretched it out 25.
He certainly put Zlotnik to shame.
That was his superpower, to stretch out his horrible quality of life for a longer period of time. There was another person who was in the lab at the time of the accident, Private Robert Hemmerly, a special engineer detachment guard, who received an exposure of approximately 31 Röntgens.
So this guy was AKA expendable crew member number one?
Yeah, he was wearing a red shirt at the time. Of soft X-rays.
So 31. One
that doesn't sound so bad.
It's soft, yeah. It's like it's like they
it's
have
like a, being hit with pillows, right?
Yeah, they have that glowing kitten as their mascot.
Yeah, yeah.
The extra soft X-rays.
So yeah, one run can be about 1 centigray, and X-rays have the same have a quality factor of 1, so they're not nearly as bad as neutrons when they come sailing into you. So he probably got off pretty lucky with only about a 3 sievert dose.
He died 33 years after the accident from acute myelogenous leukemia at the age of 62.
Mm. Myelogenous leukemia?
Sure, if that's the way you want to pronounce it.
Yeah.
You're the doctor.
Hey, how much of a sievert dose do you get from watching that TV show with the Siever family in it?
Oh, what TV show is that?
What's the name of that show?
Don't look at me.
It is unfortunately a
sub.
This is why we have an audience. Wait, which TV show? Growing Pains.
Growing Pains.
I was making a Growing Pains joke and I muffed it.
You get maximum radiation. The Demon Core was put to use for a detonation test at the Bikini Islands 5 weeks after the second fatal accident, demonstrating that the criticality experiments of Daglian and Slotin increased the efficiency of the weapon.
Well, God bless them.
So the more souls it eats, the more powerful the demon core gets. I think is where we're going with this one.
I'm going to TM this just for in case this becomes a sci-fi movie and I can sue.
We do need to write that script, the demon core.
The demon core, yeah. There it eats souls and becomes more powerful. I like it. Sold!
You just sold it to yourself?
I'm guessing that's what they're going to say when I call them.
All right, fair enough. Now, Dr. Rob, we were hoping that you could give us an update on the Fukushima situation
I would certainly be happy to do that. Okay, so as you all know, about a year ago, there was a 1-in-1,000-year earthquake that hit off the coast of Japan near Fukushima, then followed within a few hours by the 1-in-1,000-year tsunami, which finally overwhelmed the Fukushima Daiichi complex reactors and set the world into complete panic. There was recently a news conference by the Health Physics Society on the 1st of March where they discussed the radiation impact from the Fukushima Daiichi disaster. And so here's a spontaneous pop quiz
for all of you
who watch Health Physics Society news conferences.
I'm getting prepped.
Some audience guesses as to the total number of radiation-related fatalities from Fukushima. There is a prize on the line, which Torin is going to tell you about.
I have the watch it grow brain. Never feel brainless again. Replace dead brain cells from your partying habit. I assume you put it in water, and then it grows up to 600%.
Wow.
So we're going to do prices right, whoever gets closest without going over?
So don't put it in your brain. Okay, so Fred Bremer, of course, has the first guess. Zero is the first guess. Any other guesses?
One.
One, seven, three, four, two. Five, six.
This is all happening so fast.
Dr. Rob,
the largest nuclear disaster of the 21st century.
I'm going to guess 127,000.
You're not eligible for this prize. I just wanted to say that.
Actually, it was Fred Bremer. There have been zero radiation-related deaths from Fukushima. 20,000 from the earthquake and the tsunami. So, of course, what was the immediate reaction? Japan has shut down every single nuclear reactor except two. Germany, Italy, and Switzerland have said that they will stop expansion of nuclear power.
How about radiation-related monstering? How about, you know, any Godzillas?
None of that either.
Mothras?
None.
Nothing?
Nothing. And when asked, will you be studying the population of Fukushima Prefecture for the development of radiation-related cancers? The answer was, the radiation levels outside of the plant were so low that we think that it is unlikely we'll be able to detect any measurable effect from the radiation.
So I can go back to swimming in the ocean.
Except for the sharks. I'll let this one go through, yes.
Hold on one second. There is a microphone right
there.
Yeah,
so the caveat, you have to get out of your seat.
Sorry.
That's right. No
and go
shouting
to the microphone.
Out.
Yeah.
And you have to raise your hand and wait for us to point at you.
These electrons are recorded forever.
I'm wondering if there were any radiation-related illnesses.
None that have been reported, even among the workers in the plant.
Mm-hmm. Oh, what, were there workers in the plant actually in the plant when the tsunami hit?
At that time, there would have been the usual crew would have been on, right?
Okay.
Because after the earthquake, the backup diesel generator system to keep the core cool came on.
How ironic is it that diesel engines keep a nuclear reactor cool?
In an emergency. Normally, the reactor is used to keep itself cool because, hey, there's a handy energy source. But when the tidal wave came and swamped the diesel engines, then they had to go to direct seawater injection. And the seawater was put into pools for the radiation to cool off.
And it was filled with octopuses. It was gunking up all the holes.
Things.
The water goes in, the grates.
And things.
Just piles of radioactive octopuses.
Crawling out.
You're trying to turn this somehow into tentacle porn, aren't you?
This is great. You guys actually get to see all his hand gestures that we just normally make fun of. Torin, nobody can see that. Now it's not true.
My favorite.
But of course you shamed him, so he'll stop.
No, he'll never stop.
No, never stop.
My favorite's the shrugging. That's my favorite.
I know. Hey, Torin, what do you think of this?
Well, that's good to know.
Fukushima update.
So yeah, stop worrying about it. And can we also talk about that ridiculous spread of radiation through the ocean?
The particle map.
Yeah.
What's
triggered a new round of iodine pill purchasing and consumption like Smarties.
Maybe they just like the flavor of iodine. Could be unrelated.
I certainly can't get enough of it myself. So, if anyone saw within the last week or two, some Smarty Pants decided to make a map of theoretical particle spreads from the Fukushima.
Theoretical particles, they are more dangerous than regular particles, right?
Well, in terms of their actual impact, yes, it would seem to be. Yeah. And that map spread like wildfire around the Twitters, I think, last week, showing this gigantic radiation plume consuming the Pacific and I think heading for Mexico. Look out, Mexico. Meanwhile, the actual measurements at Fukushima itself... Oh, yeah, there's the map.
Yep.
Yeah, look out, look out.
I can see my house from here.
Yeah.
So it's not clear what that means, and of course they put big, bold letters on it saying this is not to be construed as a distribution of radiation map, but of course, what does everybody think when they look at this thing? Oh, my God, here
it comes. It's yellow, people, it's yellow!
Some of that stuff's red. Japan is on fire. But just relax. You know, put the iodine tablets down. I think there have actually been more iodine tablet-related illnesses than... Yeah, there were people hospitalized for misuse of iodine tablets after the...
They use it as a suppository instead of eating it?
No, but iodine's not benign. If you eat it, it can actually trigger hyperthyroidism, which can be fatal.
Oh.
Can we start fear-mongering this to just like make society better? Switch the fear-mongering from radiation to iodine. Don't take the iodine. You could get hyperthyroidism.
Well, maybe and if somebody makes a map like this.
And then we'll sell radiation over the internet to counteract
nice. To the
counteract the iodine.
Iodine, yeah. No, I like that idea.
It makes perfect sense to me.
Well, let's go to our Season 2, Episode 29 episode on tuberculosis. Our guest for the episode was Dr. Jenna Capick. That's your music.
I know, I'm really digging it.
You have a jaunty theme tune.
The jauntiest of the theme tunes. I think it's appropriate.
No, you were not a doctor when we did the tuberculosis episode.
Yes, no. At that point, I was known as possibly going to be Dr. Jenna.
Right. And then,
which progressed it, you know, to almost Dr. Jenna.
Yeah.
And now I get to be, see, I got one too.
Yeah.
It's right on the card.
She's got the biohazard symbol on her name tag.
Yeah.
So what is it you're exactly a doctor of?
I am a doctor of philosophy with a major in biochemistry and microbiology, which would be where the tuberculosis part comes into it.
Awesome. One of our fans, G.A. McKnight, on our website pointed
out... That sounds like a made-up name.
G.A. McKnight? Mm-hmm. You think everything's a made-up name. Mm-hmm. What would you say is a not made-up name?
Mr. Titwhistle, because nobody would be that silly.
I like it. So he pointed out on our website the Badger Cull debate. Have you heard about this?
I haven't.
That is a badger that deserves to be culled. That is for sure.
I would cull that for sure.
There's a picture we'll put up on causticsodapodcast.com. UK badger culling plans could kill tens of thousands of the animals, worsen the cattle tuberculosis problem, and put the country in breach of European wildlife treaty, advisors have warned. The government is to allow badger culling in England to curb cattle tuberculosis, with a similar move possible in Wales. That's the location, not the not the cetacean.
Man, there are not many whales left to cull.
I would like to see some badgers inside
Wales. I think
some
people are already on that one.
So what is the suggestion? Whales? The suggestion here is that badgers are getting tuberculosis from cows and then giving it to other cows? They're the bee with the pollen, so to speak?
I can tell you that the Department of Environment, Food, and Rural Affairs, DEFRA, will allow two culls this year in West Gloucestershire and West Somerset. If they are judged to be a success, a further 10 areas could be open for culling each year, up to a maximum of about 40. DEFRA sees the move as a part of a package of bovine TB control measures alongside restrictions on cattle movements and enhanced biosecurity on farms. Enhanced biosecurity? Is that where they put the cows in the hazmat suits?
I think that'd be, you know, sort of the next logical step. But as far as Kevin's question about why they might be wanting to, you know, cull the badgers. First off, I think they're probably just wanting to cull the badgers and trying to find some sort of reasonable excuse.
This is rationalization after the fact, right?
But so tuberculosis, the disease, is most often in humans caused by Mycobacterium tuberculosis, which is more or less a human pathogen. But as we talked about in our tuberculosis episode, there are, first off, a lot of different closely related bacteria that can have sort of primary hosts, like Mycobacterium tuberculosis for humans can also infect cows, but usually doesn't make them sick in the same way. Cows also have
they
their
just
whole...
They get bigger and bigger and bigger.
I'm not sure that tuberculosis causes that much swelling. But so there's Mycobacterium bovis, which is actually the disease that most often affects cows, but then can affect humans. And so there's sort of these different crossovers. And even if an animal doesn't get sick from a certain disease, so I'm suspecting that the badgers probably aren't sort of coughing and hacking up blood and, you know, passing out on stage and whatnot. But
are you saying that's what you're going to do pretty quick? Pass out on stage?
Not necessarily. We'll see how it goes. See what this is full of. But the badgers could be acting more or less as a reservoir for the bacterium. So there might be a whole bunch of bacteria living in the badgers and being passed from badger to badger and badger to cow and cow to human. And maybe the only thing that gets sick is the humans.
So they're like a part of the tuberculosis food chain.
Sorta, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, right. They're sort of like a happy home that the bacteria might be able to live in and hang out until they can find some hapless human too.
And they're probably a lot less. The reason they're not culling cows is because badgers are probably less tasty.
I don't know. Has anyone ever tried a badger?
Only the TB infected ones.
How are those?
Terrible. The disease cost the UK public purse about £100 million per year. Infected herds had to be slaughtered at great financial and emotional cost to farmers.
Bessie, no.
And to the taxpayer. The randomized badger culling trial, RBCT, the biggest scientific investigation of culling anywhere in the world, quit smirking, Dr. Rob, found that it can reduce incidence of TB in farm herds, provided it is done in large areas with a large proportion of badgers being killed virtually simultaneously, and that it is sustained for at least 4 years.
What? How can you do something simultaneously for four years?
Okay, so we go out and we catch them, and then we put little explosives around their neck with the remote, and then we release them back into the wild, and once we've caught them all, somebody presses a button, and all over England, boom!
Badger guts everywhere.
If only that were true, that would be, I would be behind it. I'd actually support it now.
Somebody used to vote me into English Congress or whatever so that I can make this plan happen.
Yeah, it's like if your entire platform is badger explosive devices.
That's right. And I'll just be like, all at the same time, people, come on.
No, Joe, go straight for the House of Lords, then don't have to worry about that pesky election.
Nice.
Does it involve a giant wooden badger?
Yes, there is a giant wooden badger. Without this rigor, culling can increase disease spread because it perturbs the badgers, making them roam further and infect new farms.
And if I
you killed
that,
my uncle.
If I've learned anything from that honey badger video, you don't want to perturb a badger.
Yeah, you don't give a fuck.
They don't give a shit, no.
See, so they're spending all this money culling the badgers, but I really wonder what they're saving on, like, badger mauling. You know,
yeah.
Like hospital bills for badger maulings.
Yeah, my ankles. Oh, my ankles. Natural England, which is the UK version of the EPA, warns explicitly that the only badger culling regime backed by science is that used in the RBCT. In the RBCT, culls were performed by trapping badgers and shooting them, and each area had to be covered within 10 days. By contrast, the government will allow the much cheaper option of free shooting by trained marksmen across a 6-week period, which one former government ecologist has dubbed a recipe for perturbation.
Yeah, you don't want to shoot a badger because it'll just piss them off.
Well, and by perturbing, like, I'm kind of going out on a limb here as far as what they mean by perturbing the population, because I don't really know about this case that much. But what I'm guessing is it actually means that they will start moving into different populations. So if the infection happens to, and it happens all the time, where a certain sort of subpopulation might have a much higher incidence of infection than another, then if you don't kill all of those ones in that area, making sure that you have a pretty good sort of buffer area outside there where you kill right. all of those badgers, then yeah, they're going to spread to new populations. And controlling a disease in sort of these reservoir animals or even vector animals is an enormously powerful strategy in controlling the spread of disease to humans.
So in drunk layman's terms, this is like this is like when you're at the bar and you spill a beer, but you only have enough napkins to cover the little area in front of your lap, and it runs off the other end of the table and soaks somebody else's groin.
Only if that person is so upset that they then spill their beer and soak the groins of those surrounding them.
Could happen.
In a chain reaction.
It has happened.
Where does one go to become a trained badger, Mark? Are there going to be schools?
In England, they do.
You just go to the range and you buy the badger target.
Instead of practice, the zombie man, ones. Practice. So, that's badgers.
We don't need no stinking badgers?
Nice one.
Sorry. I have to get at rabbit. Least one groan out of the crowd before the night
I'm
is out.
I'm so glad they groaned for me. Oh, we've
Chris
got a, we've
has
got a question.
Has a question.
Once you blow up all the badgers and shoot them all, does the tuberculosis still survive, or will it die without a host?
Tuberculosis doesn't sort of hang out in soil and that kind of thing. It pretty much needs an animal host. No part of the tuberculosis life cycle happens outside of an animal host.
It's not floating around in the air.
Well, for short periods of time, because right. that's how it's transmitted, you know.
Coughing.
Avoid sucking in those sneezes, which right. is harder than you think.
So when you shoot the badger and it's lying there dying and it says, come closer. I have to tell you something.
Well, all those emotional farmers, you know, yeah. that's what they're really having trouble with. It's not shooting the badger initially. It's like not, you know, listening to their last requests.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's move now to episode number 33, November 2010, Deformity. So our guest for that was Chris Stewie sure Stewart. Please come to the stage. Happy birthday, Stewie.
Thanks. I'm not sure why you brought me up on deformities, though, other than I was on that episode.
Yeah,
you were the
guest on that episode. I'm not saying
really.
That you are deformed or you have deformities.
I had the same concern on that episode, but that's okay.
But you're here now.
Yeah, I'm relatively fine. I fall within general norms, so.
So we have a news item, actually.
In the news.
A 34-year-old man in China hasn't been able to close his mouth for the past 21 years because of his huge tongue.
This is awesome.
Oh, no. Can I excuse myself from the panel?
You may
knew
not.
You were coming to Caustic Soda, people.
Wang Yupin's tongue measures 25 centimeters long, 10 centimeters wide, and 7 centimeters thick. The enormous muscle has even forced his teeth to be squeezed horizontally, causing severe facial deformity. When Mr. Yuping was born, his lips were swollen and dark, and his left ear also appeared to bulge. From the age of 6, his tongue and face began to swell, and by the time he was 13, Wang's tongue had expanded so much that he was unable to close his mouth properly.
We're going to Wang tongue tonight.
Everybody Wang tongue tonight.
What disturbs me is that I know Kevin and Joe research occasionally for the show sake. Mm-hmm. This is just torn surfing.
Things come to my inbox. I'm not going to say where they come from. Since then, he has also been unable to speak clearly, eat normally, or breathe comfortably.
Well, when you see the picture, that's hardly surprising. It's a mammoth tongue.
There is also a high risk that the vessels in his tongue could rupture and lead to a potentially fatal hemorrhage.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, that thing just, that looks to be, what, maybe about 2 liters, 1 to 2 liters? There's also a risk with this kind of thing, especially if you look at the outside and you see the sort of the varicose veins. He could go into a probably high output heart failure through that tongue, where in other words, he doesn't have
enough blood to pump into the tongue as well as the rest of his
body? Oh, he's
got
plenty of blood, but what happens is all the deformed blood vessels in the tongue don't have proper arteriolar resistance to generate pressure. So he ends up with this really low pressure circuit in parallel to his regular circulatory system. And so his heart just pumps like crazy, but it's like pumping out a window.
It's already having, like, you look at his eye, you can already see it's starting to have terrible, terrible effects on the rest of his face. So, Torin, you have to get there. You got to tell us what they think is causing this.
Over the years, Wang has visited many renowned hospitals in the country, but each time was told that his condition was too complex to treat. Now, after exploratory tests last year, Mr. Yuping is set to go under the knife again. The hospital plans to take 3 years to perform a series of 5 different surgeries. That's all the information I got.
That's it.
Yeah.
Wow.
So be good, for goodness sake.
I would love to come up with a theory as to what happened. Dr. Rob, would you have a theory on what might have caused this? Was it?
I'm going to guess it's a genetic anomaly.
Stu, you're the deformity expert here.
Yes.
Sorry.
I'm going to say genetic anomaly.
So he's a mutant, is what we're saying.
Yeah, because if you look at his face, you'll notice that the facial bones on the left side are somewhat sunken in as well.
I was going to point
part
out the
part of that's going to be the cheek deformity.
The X-Men would have been a whole different comic if this is what Stan Lee thought of when he was thinking about mutants true. The first time around.
Now I'm trying to imagine him in a yellow and blue costume, though.
I can't imagine him in a yellow and a blue costume. Thank you, Torin.
I feel he probably doesn't wear turtlenecks. I'm not going to lie. Mm. I think that'd be uncomfortable to get on.
It would be so much better of a comic, though, because instead of these people born with great gifts doing great things, it would be people with terrible curses doing great things anyway.
Working in the
Wouldn't
post office.
Lovely?
Licking the stamps.
No, being a hero. They'd be fighting for all of our freedom.
I think this guy would be a Morlock, though.
He's got Morlock written all over him. You know, he's a more lick.
Oh.
Yes! Yes! That is going to be the best one of the night, people. It's only downhill from here.
You guys have no idea how many of those we normally cut.
All right, item number 2 in the deformity topic. October 2011, Las Vegas. Wesley Warren Jr., a 47-year-old man from southern Nevada, suffers from a condition called scrotal lymphedema.
Be careful what you wish for.
Oh, nice. A condition that made his lymph nodes in his scrotum swell up with watery fluid. It has become so painful for Warren that he must rest his scrotum on a pillow and milk crate. Doctors have told Warren to have a corrective procedure, it will cost him $1 million.
God bless America.
Did they put their pinky up to their mouth when they said that? Well, we can fix it.
$1 million.
Sorry, is this surgery considered cosmetic?
Anyone can live with that. Wait, I'll get to that.
I guess this is the drawback of having an audience, is they start telling their own jokes, right?
I was saving that joke. The 47-year-old has suffered in silence with the enormous growth on his scrotum, but is now pleading for help so he can get life-changing surgery. His testicles have grown so large that he cannot wear jeans or trousers anymore and lives on a diet of antibiotics and medications. Warren wears a hoodie instead of pants, placing his legs in the arms and using the hood to support the growth. He believes he was struck by the embarrassing deformity when he squashed his privates while asleep in 2008. Dr. Rob? Possible or not possible?
Wait, hold on a sec. His supposition is that he squashed his own testicles while asleep?
Wolfman's got nards.
And he remembers the night?
I don't...
That was a hell of a squash.
His testicles then started swelling up, and the next morning they were the size of a soccer ball, quote unquote.
Yeah.
So yeah, he noticed.
Wow.
He said, "I've never felt such pain. It was like shooting pain through my entire body."
Okay. Yeah, well, it's starting with the balls, and radiating outwards.
I've had those shooting pains, and mine didn't grow that big.
When I read this article, I remember when it hit the web, and I was reading it. What it occurred to me is that it'd be nice if the Hippocratic Oath was a bit more like, say, a constitution where you could go back and put some amendments, because this was a terrible, terrible case of where there's do no harm, there's perhaps should be jump in and help at some point. There's ignoring harm, like, if you know what I mean, like, do no harm, but, well, I'm not harming him, but you're not helping him either. Like, if I recall the story correctly, he started asking for money. He went to the news.
He went on Howard Stern, in fact.
And he started getting money, and at a certain point when the money started showing up, a doctor said, "Oh, all right." If I remember correctly.
I'm sure they said it exactly. Oh, all right.
See, what amazed me about the thing is that it got to that point, and never several points along the way, there wasn't a doctor that said, "This could be interesting for medical science if we had perhaps..."
Yeah, you'd think there'd be a doctor
stepped in and had a look, or you think the fact that nobody can explain why it happened, perhaps if we could find out why it happened, that'd be handy.
You'd think somebody just stepped to the plate just for the challenge, right?
Oh, you're the giant ball sack doctor guy.
Yeah.
I can shrink those balls in three cuts.
Hey,
I can shrink those balls in two cuts. Cut those balls.
Not even a crappy doctor that just wants to be on the books for having, you know what I mean? Like, and it didn't have to get to that point. That guy could have been more than notable for the medical history text if somebody had stepped in.
Why did you reduce the size of those balls? Because they were there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he has not revealed, this article is from October last year. He has not revealed exactly how much he's raised, but said that what I've got is a start. And if you'd like to help John, you can email him at benefitballsack@yahoo.com. Not a registered charity.
It'd be hard to register your balls as a charity.
I think we could register yours. But most people, you're right.
No. My balls aren't the charity. It's anybody who attends to them. That's a charity case.
Poor people.
I see where you're going with this.
Yeah.
So next, I guess we'd like to talk about air disasters. This was from July 2010. Our guest was Lucas Black, but he is not in the continent today, as he is normally in England.
He's probably asleep.
We had him in on Skype. But I do have a news item. January 2012, Wellington, New Zealand. 11 people died when a hot air balloon caught fire after hitting a power line as it was landing 55 miles north of New Zealand capital.
Okay.
New Zealand's capital. Two of the passengers died when they jumped from the balloon's basket in a vain attempt to save their lives. Five couples and a pilot died in the crash after a 45-minute sightseeing trip over one of the country's main ballooning regions.
They have a ballooning region?
Yeah. Well, they have several. This was one of the main ballooning regions.
You don't notice this because you never look up. Yeah. There's balloons everywhere all the time, man, in ballooning regions.
All the mountain-y bits where the orcs ran around, not good ballooning territory.
I got it.
I think by ballooning regions, they mean the sky.
Yeah, not much ballooning underwater going on. Yeah.
See, were there any survivors?
No, I don't think that there was.
Yeah, so then I would have been one of the jumpers. I would rather be a jumper than a burner.
As the balloon was preparing to land, it hit wires on a power line, causing sparking in the basket. At this point, two of the 11 people on board, a male and a female, appeared to have jumped from the basket. The balloon then made a sharp ascent. A fire ignited on board, and it plummeted into a field. A witness saw flames trailing about 30 feet from the gondola as it plunged, coming down like a rocket, he said. Relatives, here's the heartbreaking part for you people.
Oh, that wasn't the heartbreaking part.
Relatives who had bought tickets for the flight as a Christmas present for their parents watched the disaster. It shot up in the air, which I guess was because of the heat, and we saw two people jump out and everyone was screaming. The screaming was just terrible. And then when the canopy went up in flames, it just dropped. The website of Early Morning Balloons Limited says, a balloon cannot be steered. It drifts with the wind. Part of the ballooning magic is that you never know in advance where you might land.
I hate my brain right now.
The magically disappearing...
That was the company that this balloon belonged to? That was their website?
Early Morning, Early Morning Balloons Limited. Yeah.
I have the song stuck in my head now.
Up, up, and away?
Away in my beautiful balloon. Do we have to pay if I sing?
Yes. Specifically you.
Oh.
Now, Dr. Rob, you brought to our attention something that we may have mentioned, the 1950 B-36 crash in BC.
Oh, yes. The United States Air Force.
What can you tell us about that?
Well, there was a B-36 bomber, which had a, believe it or not, something called a practice nuclear warhead on board.
Now, practice just means it's just like a big, dummy piece of metal, right?
Yeah, it's got 500 pounds of uranium, but it's just a practice nuclear warhead.
Well, wait a sec. Hold on a sec. Why do they need to put the uranium in it? If it's practice, just like put rocks in it.
I don't know.
You're close to the point. You can't get the weight without the uranium by jamming in anything else, can you?
Probably not. It's pretty dense stuff, yeah.
And if you use something else like rocks, you're going to outsize the volume, which means you're not loading and running around with something the proper size and shape of
a
bomb.
So wait, there's nothing that exists that's the same kind of density level?
Nothing like lead, say. Maybe. No, nothing like that.
Now, that said, yes, it's the military, so we didn't put a trigger on it.
So the airplane was on its way to Alaska and ran into engine trouble out over the Pacific. And so the pilot said, well, we need to... A, get rid of our practice nuke, and B, land this plane. So they,
In that order.
Now, this practice nuke, which is what the United States Air Force maintains to this day, also happened to have a high explosive conventional detonator on it.
Boo. I was wrong. They did have the trigger. Yeah.
So
this isn't sounding very practice at all.
Yeah, it's a really it's a marginally plausible story, but it's maintained to this day. And they decided to drop the bomb, not armed, and just destroy it with the conventional explosives. So they went ahead and did that. And 500 pounds of uranium went scattering hither and yon, somewhere down at the bottom of the Pacific now. Maybe it's going to join the Fukushima plume. But as it turns out, they all bailed out of the plane, which then, don't be fooled by this picture, actually came to a gentle landing on the side of a mountain.
Oh.
And you know what? That sounds a lot worse than it probably was. And it's pretty rare on this show.
There were 17 crew members on board, five of who died from exposure from landing in the Pacific. 12 were rescued by the RCAF. And so what were you guys doing? Nothing, you know, just ferrying a plane. Well, where's the plane? Oh, it just sort of crashed into the ocean, we're pretty sure. Okay. Oh, and by the way, we need to go look here for something. Well, what do you need to look for? Well, we can't tell you. And so then there was this secret operation to find the airplane and then to destroy it in sight, which took about 2 years to accomplish. And this is the result. And I think there's still little bits and fragments, and it was last rediscovered, I forget how long ago, by surveyors.
So by destroying it in sight, what did they, like, did they eat it? Did they...
They blew it up. They found it, and then they blew it up.
But only with practice explosives.
Yeah.
The crazy part is the number of air mishaps and near air mishaps that have left nukes scattered around the globe missing and lost. There's one in the Everglades somewhere. There's one in the Gulf of Mexico.
It's like a video game puzzle to collect all the pieces.
Yeah. I want to say there's one from like the Three-Day War, but I think that might be the plot point for Clear and Present Danger. So I won't claim that to be historically accurate. But I know there's at least a couple. And as recent as just a few years ago, one was lost. I think the one in the Gulf of Mexico was lost within like the last decade, and they still can't find it. Like,
they've been talking about the last couple of years how the Russians seem to be misplacing nukes all the time these days, last like 10 years or so. They can't quite remember where they left them all, and you know they don't have a real accurate count. And
And the guys who misplace them end up with, like, they somehow misplace brand new beautiful houses in their property and shiny new cars.
Misplace.
Yeah.
If you Google missing nukes, there's a couple of websites that try to keep track of the known nukes.
Missingnukes.com?
Is it?
I hope so.
Maybe. It should be if it's not.
It'd be a fantastic Google map.
You go to missingnukes.com, it's actually a guy, it's like one of those sales sites. Nukes, reactors, search. And the poor guy had to take, you know, missingnukes.ca or something. Like
that. Website unavailable. Somebody could register missingnukes.com.
Oh, there you go. Does someone have a question relating to nuclear
bombs or air disasters?
Well, not quite a question. I just, I think you're letting them off too easy. I just looked up the density of tungsten is almost exactly the same as uranium.
Is
so
it? Okay.
They could have easily gone with something not radioactive.
All right. I knew it.
But they didn't have the tungsten. They were on a time constraint.
I'm not a very strong.
It was a practice bomb, internets. It was a practice bomb.
This is what we get for having really smart audience who have like Google web access, on their phones, yes. Right?
That was a mistake. We should have taken them at the door.
Yeah.
Like, how do you?
We'll make up our own facts. Thank you very much.
usually people go to the website to tell us how wrong we are. This way, people can tell it to us in real time. This is
the
fastest
turnaround ever.
Yeah.
How is it a practice bomb if it not only has a conventional trigger in it, but also 20 pounds of uranium?
It's a story.
Is that like a real bomb that they were just like, well, we weren't going to set it off?
Do you want me to play devil's advocate last time?
Yeah.
And I'm by no means a U.S. military apologist, although it's going to come off sounding that way. Go Marines. The only other thing I can think of is that the practice portion means they want the entire process of loading, running it, landing it, taking it on and off, which means the practice portion that requires the uranium would be the guys handling it and loading it.
Okay.
And the safety step. That's the only thing I can think of that you would call a practice.
Or they wanted to practice bombing Canada. They just look down and go, oh, yeah, we could do it. We could totally do it right now.
Now, that said, it's the military, so it could just be bullshit, right?
I just figured it out.
Okay.
Practice is an acronym
Let's hear it.
It stands for Personal Reactor Action Combustible Total Inflammable Combustible Energy. I worked it out just now.
Wait, is that the American spelling of practice?
Yes.
And I thought some mask was a mouthful.
Yes, they use combustible
and
twice.
They needed the practice bomb.
Because it was that combustible.
Okay.
In Alaska for practice patrols over Soviet Russia.
Now, you've been in some tight, hairy... near plane crashes, have you not, sir?
Speaking of genetic anomalies. But
yes, my previous secret life was in the Air Force, in which I did have a number of unfortunate incidents.
Tell us about some of those.
Anecdotes.
Don't
I love
spare
myself.
The juicy details.
Okay, yeah. Okay. Well, I may have been involved over a similar region of the Pacific Ocean as that B-36. On a long-range patrol, we had just taken off from Comox Airport, and we were heading out on a 14-hour patrol. So we had a full tank of gas, and by which I mean 90,000 pounds of jet fuel. And we were an armed patrol, so we had four 500-pound Mark 46 torpedoes.
Are those the big ones?
Well, the biggest ones that we carry, yeah.
Were they practice?
No, they weren't practice. Yeah, they were armed and fueled.
Is it like a factor thing? So the 45 is like half the size and 44 is half the size of that?
No, that just means it's sort of the 46th iteration, the 46th generation. Yeah, so Mark 46 would have been generation 46.
Too bad.
Yeah.
Did a lot of...
And unfortunately, as we were climbing out of Comox, we were struck by lightning. There was a great big flash through the cabin, and everything sort of stopped for that two-second satellite cartoon moment. And from the back... Did you guys see that? Oh, shit, that was real. And we did our fire of unknown origin check. Luckily, we did fry some components in the plane, but then when I looked in the bomb bay, there was red fluid leaking from one of the torpedoes.
Ooh. Red fluid, that's good, right? Is it blood?
Yeah. Red is the safety color.
Yeah.
And so then we had to do an emergency fuel dump, but we couldn't dump enough. You can never dump enough fuel when you're full of gas because of the way fuel switches between the fuel tanks.
Then you obviously haven't been in a bathroom after Joe's been in there.
I haven't. But I did have to do an overweight landing back in Comox, and the after action report came back and said that the starboard wing had been struck 32 times by lightning.
By lightning?
Yeah.
In a row?
In a row, in under a tenth of a second.
Okay, that is ridiculous. Haven't you ever heard the old adage that lightning does not try to strike 32 times?
No, I hadn't. They must have made that one up later, yeah.
Well, no, all they said is it doesn't strike twice. Anything from three on is fair game. So.
We also destroyed a lightning arrestor in the aft of the aircraft, and the red fluid turned out to have been fuel.
Juice.
Hold on a second. You had a lightning arrestor.
Yes.
Doesn't sound like it did its job.
No, lightning struck and then it arrested it. You're coming with me, get in jail.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
You can't pre-arrest something.
Or it
throw the lightning book at him, boys.
He came in, hit it once, and stopped it from leaving so that he hit it 31 more times.
No, it clearly stopped the 33rd strike.
Came back with its buddies. And
the 31
as it
was it taking its cup and ringing along the prison bars.
Yeah, you needed a lightning gang unit.
It's a close call because it's only rated to 35 strikes. So.
Isn't this the movie Shocker?
I've seen Shocker.
I'm sure you have. We don't want to hear about it.
It has what's his name? Agent Skinner off of X-Files. He's the bad guy.
Hold on, I think we're hearing about it.
Yeah.
In spite of what you just said, I think we just heard something about it.
I have no control.
And you brought it up. It's your fault, so.
How about the hurricane one?
Well, that's kind of boring. I mean, we were leaving Hawaii. We were running from a hurricane, and then our windshield
cracked.
Hold
on a second. I love that you start this story with, it's kind of boring. I mean, we were running from a hurricane. That sounds like the start to an awesome story.
I have an air disaster.
What was on the 8-track playing while you were running from a hurricane? Was it Scorpions?
Can you see Scorpions, yeah.
We had to leave our 8-track tapes behind because we had to leave in a hurry. But the much more interesting story, I think, my favorite story, was when I was flying in a NATO operation, again, armed with torpedoes.
Name dropper.
Yeah. And we had just fateful words. Here's a new software update for the aircraft. It works great. We've never seen anything that works this well. Wow, this is fantastic. Are you sure we should take this into operations? We've never done this before without 6 months of beta testing. No, it'll be fine. You can't believe it.
Just don't press the Q on the keyboard.
Yeah.
So we're flying one day, and as it happens with the brand new software, lucky version 13, as it turns out, we're flying along in dense fog in part of a NATO operation when all the ships have 5-mile self-protection systems. They'll begin firing guns and rockets at anything airborne that comes within 5 miles.
Oh.
And this is in the Adriatic Sea, which is the sea between former Yugoslavia and Italy. It's very, very tiny. It's one of the seven seas from Greek mythology.
Okay.
Right? Suddenly, all the electrics in the plane went off. It just went pitch black in the cabin.
And was it nighttime?
No. There's okay. just no windows in the plane, right? So I mean, the plane was still flying, but all of a sudden it's, you know, we're looking at our screen.
Well, at least you okay. can see what you're about to crash into.
Everything went off. And we were able to kind of salvage one marine band radio to talk to the ships.
If Hollywood has taught me anything, you do not need instrumentation to fly a plane.
Not in a fog, you don't. But, I mean, the aircraft instruments themselves were fine because they're not on the system. But this fabulous new amazing software managed to actually kill the radar, which has a default mode which operates completely outside of software. So this actually, we had thought until this time, was an electrical engineering impossibility. So, mm-hmm. hats off, what software designers. Very fortunately, a Dutch ship was able to provide us with guidance vectors between...
Turn a little left.
Yeah.
A little more left.
Yeah, that's right.
Good.
Do you like mayo on your fries? No. Turn us over to a British ship. And then we were essentially useless and sent home. But luckily...
Story of my life.
Yeah. No.
Kind of the story of the Canadian forces.
Mm. Hey now. Hey. That's personal.
I think we have to move on to bacteria at this point.
Yeah.
The bacteria episode was from season 2, episode 40, October 2011. Dr. Jenna was our guest for bacteria.
You bet.
And we got some listener mail from Amanda M. I can say firsthand that salmonella sucks. I have 5 snakes, and I know about the connection between salmonella and reptiles, so I'm extra careful when handling them, making sure to wash my hands thoroughly before and after. But I cleaned their water dishes at 6 a.m. on a Sunday morning before going out, and by 11 a.m. I was feeling poorly. I got home at 12 p.m. and slept until 8 p.m., then proceeded to experience the worst intestinal cramping I have ever felt before or since. It was when I started passing blood that my boyfriend demanded I go to the ER.
Always a good tip, everybody.
Yeah, take that one to the bank.
Since it's a reportable illness, I got a call from the Department of Health and had a big, long interview with them to try and determine where I got it. I'd heard about recent E. coli outbreaks with spinach, so that's what I thought happened, but the labs came back to say salmonella. So I had to take fecal samples from each of my snakes and send them in for testing, and then some ladies from the Department of Health came by to swab the tanks, and voila, it was indeed salmonella from my babies. She's some kind of horrible gorgon creature. Yeah. Well,
it reminds me of the hoax episode, the one with the rabbits.
Oh, yeah.
My babies!
The picture Joe put up reminds me of those pictures people put of their pugs dressed as Batman only.
It's not actually a snake. It's a mouse dressed as a snake.
It's
a snake.
It's an amazing costume. It really is. That is adorable.
We'll put that image up on causticsodapodcast.com. And she linked to an article from the New York Times from July 2010.
2010?
Yes, that's in the far, far distant future.
18,000 years in the future.
It's that's when Warhammer 40,000 is... Oh, no, it's 40,000. That's why it's called Warhammer 40,000. Take mice from freezer, thaw, feed to pet snakes, and do not forget to wash your hands. That is the message from public health officials in the wake of a salmonella outbreak that has sickened more than 400 people, many of them snake owners or their children, in the U.S. and Britain. The illnesses have been traced to frozen mice sold over the internet as food for exotic pets by a small Georgia company called Mice Direct.
Ah.
It's right on the nose.
The company announced a recall involving millions of frozen mice and said that it would begin irradiating future shipments to kill infected bacteria. Call back to the radiation episode. But
then you're going
to
get giant angry green mice.
The recall drew back a curtain on a world of exotic pet enthusiasts for whom there is nothing unusual about keeping a dozen snakes in the living room and a few zippered bags of mice in the freezer.
It's just so much more convenient for the reptile keeper to have a bag of rodents in their freezer.
That's an amazing French accent.
Said Justin. Said Justin Kobilka, who raises and sells pythons in Georgia. Buying frozen rodents saves repeated trips to the local pet shop to buy live mice, he said, and spares squeamish owners from having to watch pets kill their prey. Why the fuck did you get a snake?
Do you know how you kill your food for your pet if you're killing it yourself? I have a cousin that worked at the Calgary Zoo, and one of her jobs as like
junior she's the mice junior killer?
Keeper, yeah, the rat killer for the snakes. And it's literally rat in bag. Whack.
Oh.
And then warm rat.
Yeah, I just say let the snake do it and watch nature unfold.
Can you imagine being the poor guy that has to be in charge of the recall? Like there are government officials that are like, I'm recalling a car. It's a career maker. I'm recalling hamburger. It's a career maker. When you recall the mice.
When I was in kindergarten, I have an anecdote for this. When I was in kindergarten, we went on a field trip to a pet store. And the pet store owner, and this is the part now looking back on it I find curious, decided the kids would love it if they saw a live snake feeding.
Oh, sure.
I think he was right on base, man. Oh. I totally would have loved to see live snake feeding.
He was right about this guy, but...
But that's why you're here.
There's a whole lot of screaming and caterwauling from all the other kids in the class. But what he did is he took a live rat and dropped in the cage with this giant python. Like this python was feet long, feet and feet. It was curled up, so I don't know how many feet. But it was
well, you were
feet.
Smaller at the time, so you can't possibly.
He's talking over it. He's giving us a narration as it's happening. He drops a rat in there, and he starts explaining how.
Wait, did he sound like David Attenborough?
I do not remember the tenor of his
Here
voice.
Here is the rat looking rather excited, perhaps a little trepidatious.
He was explaining to us that you have to feed them live animals because that's the way they like it, and the rat is hopping around like. Nobody's business.
Oh, shit.
And then it actually like flops over onto its back and all its limbs are twitching. And he starts to tell us that it's so scared by the snake that it's having a heart attack. Right? And this is the point.
And then the kids started having heart attacks one by one.
This is the point where the kids start to scream and like run out of
doing
the room.
The same thing.
That rodent didn't use the little wheel enough. Its cardio was right. Yeah. No.
Kevin, that is so adorable.
I know. I thought it was awesome, but that was the day I decided I wanted to be a zoologist.
Oh, nice. I'm glad you didn't follow up on that.
Yeah, no.
In humans, salmonella typically can cause diarrhea, vomiting, and stomach cramps. Snakes have become infected after eating tainted mice, although the snakes may show no signs of illness. Snake owners can become sick from handling the frozen or thawed mice, handling infected snakes, or cleaning feces from the enclosure. So, public service announcement then.
Yeah,
for those who have snakes.
I'm guessing some of our listeners actually do have snakes.
Probably.
People should not use a microwave oven to thaw frozen mice.
Or at least not, if they do, maybe a dedicated.
Oh, yeah.
It's not like they're expensive these days.
That is true.
Just put $30. One right by the snake cage.
That's right.
Because the bacteria can spread to other food that you might put in the microwave, your Hot Pockets. Mice and reptiles should be kept out of the kitchen and away from areas where food is served. Reptile cages should not be cleaned in the kitchen sink.
Okay.
Mice should not be kept in a freezer with food for humans. And reptile owners should wash their hands thoroughly after handling their pets or the rodents the pets eats.
All this sounds like it's in the duh category.
Yeah, well.
On the other hand, if your kitchen sink is your biggest sink and you don't really know, you might, take a couple of chances here and there. Yeah.
But
it's not just snakes, it's dead turtles.
Mice, it's dead mice and feces.
Lizards.
Like, I'm not putting that in my kitchen sink under any conditions.
So a dedicated sink, dedicated microwave, a dedicated freezer, and a dedicated room. I mean, these things
just adding up.
They practically need granny flats.
Well, you could just get them a small apartment.
Yeah.
No big deal. Yeah.
That'd be the best episode of Hoarders ever.
The snakes and mice are fighting it out.
My house got too full, so I moved next door.
Maybe that's what happened in Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
It was just a snake hoarder in that horrible temple.
It's like the snake and mice Thunderdome down the basement, right?
My dad used to keep snakes when he was younger in a bathtub in the backyard.
Right. That's a separate room. That's a dedicated enclosure.
There you go. And I don't think they bathed any humans in the bathtub, although I'm not 100% sure about that.
Just when you were a baby.
And I had turtles when I was young that can also have the same issue, and we were always instructed to, you know, very religiously wash your hands.
And do not lick your turtles.
Yes. I think if I had gotten sicker a little more often from the turtles, I would have realized that about bacterial sickness. And I mean, I might be a microbiologist, but for some reason, I like to live on the edge when it comes to food poisoning. So I'd like to put forward, while we're on the topic of bacterial food poisoning, another public service announcement. Do not, under any circumstances, eat chili that is boiling in the fridge.
Boiling in the fridge?
No matter how tasty you think the chili is going to be.
Was it tasty?
It was delicious. I ate the whole bowl.
What's the next topic, Torin?
Well, actually, this is on the same topic under bacteria. One of our fans, Zuzu, asks, if one was to notice necrotizing fasciitis breaking out, would pouring alcohol on it slow it down?
No.
It can be caused by different things.
Zuzu, I hope you didn't send that message in too long ago.
All right, well, let's move on to a pride follow-up. This goes out to Chris Stewart. You had something about, we had talked about on our last follow-ups.
I don't really have more information than you guys had. Mostly it was one of those instances where I'm listening to the episode and I'm screaming and in public and strangers are wondering. Because I think you guys kind of buried the lead a little bit. I had read the same stories online as well leading up to it. And
well, what was the story that we talked about?
The story was a woman got admitted to the hospital and somebody it basically attempted back alley cosmetic surgery, like injecting cement or whatever.
Oh, this was
into her and mix a cocktail of other things.
This was the cement for butt implants.
This is the lead you guys kind of buried. Is the stories weren't very very clear on it. Like they spoke about
the butt implants,
the person who did the procedure, and then the woman who was affected. But what they didn't, and then half of them had this photo. What they didn't clarify, because you asked, like, why did they think this was going to work, or how could they possibly think this would work? That's because that's the person who administered the operation and all that there, yes.
The procedure?
Yeah.
That's the doctor.
Wait, that's the surgeon?
That's the surgeon.
The surgeon.
Well,
only a couple of articles clarified that the doctor, I'll use it in quotes for in deference to the other two guests, was in the process of identifying herself as female, but all the articles were using
a male name.
Her male name. You can see, like, whatever happened to the poor woman that was admitted to the hospital, it was the one time things went horribly wrong, she ended up in the hospital. Whereas the person they arrested, like, this is an arrest photo. That's why it's front on side.
This is the mugshot.
That's a lot. Like, that is a lot of... And obviously, to no ill effect, other than it looks like she is wearing jodhpurs. Like, it is...
I am now
no
turned,
way, that thing's totally real.
I have completely turned around on this issue, because before, when we talked about the story under follow-ups, mm-hmm. I was pointing the finger at this quote-unquote doctor who would do something so horrible to innocent people, but now I'm pointing my finger at the quote-unquote innocent people, because who would go to this person and say, inject my butt with something?
Oh, I want that.
Yeah. That.
Can you do that for me?
Yeah.
Oh, sure, it's easy.
Different strokes for different folks.
Well, I mean, you can look at it, it's a beauty culture, and not everybody can afford the stuff that they're trying to sell you for a beauty culture. And if someone came up saying, look, I did it, I mean, even if that's cartoonally over accentuated, like that's not what you're going for, at least you look at it and go, it's cheap and they're not dead. And there will always be a percentage of people who will go, why not?
Hold on a sec, Stewie. Does that mean that's all you need for your surgical procedures? To walk in and say,
yeah.
It's cheap and they're not dead.
Okay, yes. we've got a question or comment.
Yeah, I just want to say, in addition to pointing fingers at the people who actually engage in this procedure or do it, we can also point pictures at the systems of gatekeeping that end up pushing trans-identified people out of proper medical care and intimidate them away from pursuing actual doctors.
Right.
Yeah.
That they'll set up all kinds of horrible hoops that you have to jump through and that not everybody can and not everybody can afford. And if you have a choice between not making any steps towards transition and going with this person who's saying, oh, well, I can, you know, make you look all female and stuff for real cheap. Mm-hmm. You know, that might be what you're going to do. So it's a systemic problem, not just, you know, idiots, quote unquote, making a bunch of stupid mistakes.
Yeah, agreed.
Well,
thanks, Natalie.
Yeah.
That's Natalie Reed, everybody, and you should check out her blog.
Totally fair commentary.
Yeah, and that's the reason I wanted to bring it up, was because the article, it was quite clear that the articles were mixing, whoever was writing it, the different
skewed.
People, confused, whatever. It was not horribly clear. And I think a lot of people, if you ran into the article, because they were speaking in male as an offender, and then this victim was female, and then,
they had that picture.
Only one picture, yeah. And none of them had cut lines saying who was. That's it. Like the pieces would go together normally. That was the woman who was affected. That's in fact the person they did that to themselves.
Yeah, I mean the fact that this person is trans identified doesn't actually make them less of an asshole for doing it to other innocent victims. Like this person.
No, but
is
the point that was brought up is fair enough.
Yeah,
she did that to herself for much the same reasons that the other person went. It's cheap. Why not?
What I was saying was that this looks awful.
Yeah. Yeah.
Different strokes, I guess.
The cement part is what blows my mind. Because I've heard of other similar stories of people injecting like various types of like hardware store silicone and stuff like that. And at least at a certain level, I'm like, that's got to be toxic. But at least I understand the thinking. It's the cement part that it completely lost me on it.
You mean that's like parking lot cement? Not
it's tire sealants and a bunch of other things that you should not put in your body. I'm sure you would agree.
Of anyone who says that they don't want a nice firm ass.
All right. Well, we're going to do our Burns follow up then. Because we were talking about I don't know if you listened to this. This is also, was on our follow-ups episode?
Yes.
The last follow-ups episode?
I think so, yeah. It was very recent.
And it was about the woman who put her baby in the microwave.
Yeah.
Don't know if you listened to this. Part of her defense was that she had an epileptic seizure. And our question was, is that a viable defense?
Right. The epileptic version of the Twinkie defense, or was this like legit?
Is this a legitimate defense, which is an entirely different legal issue? Joe, there was a couple of times that I believe Kevin was, is this even possible? Like that was my impression of you.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
At your most incredulous.
But you have to start it out with, what?
Kevin, if you can't make a show, you know who to call.
Yeah.
You guys expressed some distrust of the idea that somebody coming out of a seizure
would put their baby in a microwave
And I
stand behind that position, by the way.
I do need to distinguish between the idea that this woman is and her defense team is putting it forth as the reason why she did it. This night, I think it was a 19-year-old mom or something like that.
I think she had like 3 or 4 kids before the incident.
I'm not in the defense of the woman here. Like, I have no real understanding of how the case is proceeding,
right,
or what they're arguing or what the facts or details are. And there's a lot to take into account there. But what I did want to bring up is the fact that most people are only familiar with seizures in terms of what you see on television,
right,
which is fall to ground, flop around, foam at mouth.
Usually started by Pokemon or whatever on the TV.
The epileptic robots from The Simpsons, right? Epileptic robot show from there in Japan.
It's super epileptic robot seizure fighting robots or whatever. Yeah. And most television will either end with person passed out after the seizure, and that's the seizure's over, to, oh, I'm groggy. And that, let's put it this way, seizures are kind of understood, and there's still a lot not understood about seizures. I mean, the fact of the matter is that when people have a seizure, everything from very, very mild ones to the very, very severe ones, once the seizure activity is done, which is like an electrical firestorm in your brain, which is what people are familiar with falling and losing control of your body and all that, there is a state where they're coming out of it called a postictal state.
Post-ictal. Okay.
Ictal referring to the seizure portion. The best way to describe it, if anybody has seen something like this, is that it's like somebody who's groggy and half asleep and coming out of a dream, only with a person coming out of a dream, you can, hey, wake up, and they're like, ah, well, and shake themselves awake or whatever. This can last for 5 minutes, half an hour in general, and in some cases run for, there's cases of days, I believe, it runs for quite some time. It is like talking to somebody in a dream sometimes. They can be quite confused, mumbly, and incoherent,
right,
a little lost and confused, and able to move and all that perhaps, but not.
I think the thing is that when you see the seizure, you think of it as a physical reaction, but it's really a misfiring in the brain that's causing it, right? So when you see it and think,
you're saying
oh,
that the mind and the body are linked somehow?
Strangely enough.
Yeah.
But I think that if you see somebody having a seizure on the floor, you think something's wrong with their body, but that's not what's going on.
This postictal period is supposedly the period by which the brain is resetting itself, it's healing itself or whatever. If you use the term, it's rebooting itself, that gives you an idea of what the state the brain's in. Like, it's not fully present, the person's not fully there or aware.
My computer takes forever.
Also, one of it is no memory.
Right.
That's quite common. During that period, not only of the seizure, but of the post-seizure period itself, no memory of what's going on. But the fact of the matter is that these people can be quite mobile and will go through familiar actions.
Right.
Get up, walk around. If they're slightly more clear rather than mumbly and incoherent, you can sometimes hold conversations. but they'll be really nonsensical conversations.
I think the problem was that the baby was wrapped in a tortilla shell.
That was what it was? Well, I read one of the articles and it was like folded the baby in half and put in microwave. But the thing, so again, I'm not defending the woman at all. I don't know how strong the
defense is. No, I think what you're saying
is
you go ahead and cook your babies. I think that's what I heard.
That's you did warn it was all downhill from here, didn't you? Anyways, I just wanted to clarify, like listening to the episode, you guys, as guys who probably haven't had any experience with epilepsy or seizures, there was a lot of confusion, it sounded.
We admit that we're
We're not experts.
That's why we have experts on. We're just kind of funny.
Well, I think that leads into Lesser of Two Evils. Oh, yeah.
We never have these normally when we record. Never. It's awesome. We have Kevin go, da-na-na-na, and then I look at him and go.
Most of the things Kevin says are replaced with music. What do we got for Lesser of Two Evils?
I suggest we start off with, and Dr. Jenna, you'll have to project a little bit. We go with the overly giant scrotum, so big that we have to wear a hoodie instead of pants.
Let's just say you can get a scrotum.
How do you know I don't already have one?
There you go.
I guess that's
true. There's no proof.
Concerned. So that, or how about the radiation brick?
Oh, error? That guy who tried to knock the brick.
25 days to live?
25 days to live.
After you've been irritated by mishandling some bricks?
Should we lessen it a bit and go, you don't know how much radiation you've got?
No, I'd say 25
days. Yeah.
25 days.
Go critical.
All right.
In order to make it even remotely close, we have to make it so that scrotal situation is permanent. You cannot have an operation to get it reduced.
Inoperable scrotum.
Giant hoodie-sized scrotum.
I'm going to go one more, and it doesn't stop growing.
Oh.
Because,
I mean, 25 days
far.
To live, you're going to have to give me something horrible.
Yeah.
So it's going to be, not only is your life eventually horrible, it just gets worse and worse.
You're going to run out of hoodie sizes.
Exactly.
A couple years down the road, it'll be like James and the Giant Peach. Right?
I was thinking you have to find the remains of that burned balloon, start using that.
Yeah. You have a scrotal moo-moo. Right?
Balloon pants.
Okay, so giant, never stop growing scrotum.
Yeah.
Versus irradiated, 25 days to live.
Now, am I spending most of those days in a hospital bed unconscious, Dr. Rob?
Oh no,
what's
radiation.
The quality of life here.
Radiation sickness is far more fantastic than that.
okay.
There's an initial
details.
Period of illness, nausea, vomiting, and diarrhea.
Yeah.
And then
business as usual.
Then there's what
Saturday night
doctors call the latent phase, what everybody else calls the walking dead phase,
oh.
Where you feel fine.
So far, I'm voting for the radiation.
You feel fine.
Yeah.
For who knows how long, but then the inevitable slide back into bloody dysentery, uncontrollable vomiting,
right.
Delirium, coma, death.
Okay.
So at least, so you get that little respite. You get your walking dead phase, put your affairs in order, and then you go.
Well, you don't know because you don't know how much radiation you got.
On a period, right. if we're saying that we have 25
from the
days.
The demon core.
Do you have a rough estimate of what the latent phase is, the walking dead phase, and then the deterioration?
Well, it would depend on the dose. If you got 50 sieverts like our poor friend, you may not have a latent phase.
Oh.
Yeah, you might just go straight into frank radiation sickness and then die of overwhelming infection.
Let's say for the sake of argument.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, you know, do you want to die or have a giant scrotum for, I can always choose to kill myself later.
That's always your out.
Yeah. let's say you've probably got about 20 good days.
20 good days
out of the 25.
Yeah. Just a quick question: is that the guy that saved the other guys, like partially shielded, or is that
no?
Okay,
no.
Yeah.
I'm still gonna go with the radiation.
You would take the 20
eyes?
Good days.
I have some really bad, frustrating days with the testicles I've got. So. This thing where you guys tell me they're gonna get more annoying and more in the way.
Yeah.
Radiation.
Because at least it's over. Like it's like pulling a Band-Aid off, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I
you guys
it.
Have been talking for 5 minutes, and I had the answer pretty much right away, really. So,
Dr. Jenna, what about you? What do you think?
Well, I think that, you know, both scenarios really present some interesting opportunities.
You have such a positive outlook. I love the fact that you threw opportunity into Lesser of Two Evils. This is amazing.
Always.
You just want to write the paper on your own giant scrotum, don't you?
I just really know how to market myself. I love the ones where you know you're going to die in a short period of time because I always figure that you know, you're so motivated to really have that good quality of life, and your highs and lows are going to be so intense. It's definitely...
You can take that hot air balloon ride you've been dreaming of and die. And die on some power lines instead.
There we go. You know, you can do all the adrenaline junkie stuff that you always thought was irresponsible for your family and whatnot. On the other hand, the scrotum situation sort of presents some really interesting engineering issues and challenges for, you know, harnesses, portable harnesses.
Yeah.
You can have all kinds of interesting workarounds. Lots of, I'm assuming if you, again, marketed yourself properly, many career opportunities that would otherwise not be available to you. I have always been interested about, you know,
being
circus
a bouncer?
Life. No, a bouncer. Oh, God.
A bouncing bouncer.
Oh, my. So many mental images. I think I would go with the scrotum. You know, right. Notwithstanding the fact that I am a bearer of ovaries, I think that over the course of your life, if you really looked at that properly, maybe it'd get you down for, you know, a few years. But I feel you could mentally overcome that, come up with all kinds of really creative physical solutions to the problem, and have some pretty interesting memoirs.
So you just like you figure you would acclimatize, and you know you become world famous as like the giant scrotum guy.
Well, this is what I'm saying.
Okay, Dr. Rob, what do you think?
I'm just going to jump in before Dr. Rob. I think you need to try and get to middle age with the pair of testicles before you jump to that answer.
I mean, perhaps it's just been in Dr. Jenna's answer has been informed by the fact that she hasn't had to deal with scrotum up till now.
That's true.
Before I answer, I just want to know one thing.
Uh-huh.
Is the cement surgeon out of jail yet? Because at least there is hope.
You want back alley scrotum
But if she's
surgery?
Still in jail.
What are you saying? You want some kind of counterweight to the balls? Like injected in your ass?
Well, if no doctor is willing to intervene.
Right.
I'd either have to resort to self-surgery.
Right.
Or cement surgery.
Right.
Yeah, is he still a doctor? Can he like...
It's inoperable. It's inoperable.
If you like, operate, you'll just die. How about that?
It's
very essence of you
condition.
Is in that scrotum.
Yeah.
Wow. It got so big your brain fell down into it.
The horror is if those balls got big enough, I would seek out the demon core and dive into it willingly headlong in the hope of never coming back.
So both then.
Yeah,
you're saying you take both.
I don't see any other way out.
Okay, fair enough. To answer this question, I need to know the rate of growth.
Can't tell you that.
Yeah, it's a roll of the dice.
Roll of dice.
It could be an inch a decade, or
how
it could be
that matter?
Yeah. Because I'm just thinking it can get so big that it'll like take over the world.
So
and
really
then I will finally
so what
be the
really
master.
Asking is there an upper limit?
The only
Is there a ceiling? There isn't. We know that. So it's just a matter of will the testicles last longer than my normal lifespan? Like, will they?
They would stop growing after death.
Torrin just keeps eating and eating, a moment on the lips, a lifetime in the...
The article said it was filled with a clear fluid. Is there a medical name for that sort of scrotal care? Lymph?
Lymph.
And what kind of commercial applications can I get by selling my scrotal lymph?
Well...
What, do you just become this lymph factory? You're just
I'm
all
thinking.
Of a sudden you're
just
like,
hook me up.
All right, just tap it.
So maybe they keep growing, but just keep draining and draining and draining.
Well, or at least get the financial benefit of it.
I don't even care about the radiation. I take the giant scrotals.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, I just like life too much, even if it's going to be inconvenient and horrible.
Giant scrotal life.
Yeah, and who knows, maybe it grows fast enough, it'll reach whatever that limit is on mass and turn into a black hole. And then I will like have balls that will start destroying the universe.
Well, now you guys are going to be ridiculous.
That would be on caustic soda?
Yeah. Well,
I'll take 25 years of huge balls over 25 days of radiation sickness.
All right.
What is wrong with you people?
Oh no, here's
look, it's
here's
not that it wouldn't be horrible.
Back me up, Kevin.
Here's I'm with Stewie. With Stewie on this one, and here's why. I've only been kicked in the nuts like 3 times in my entire life, and I never want it to happen again. If you had balls that giant, you'd be knocking them off, like knocking things off of tables. You'd be like, you know, people would brush by. Oops, sorry, I elbowed your balls, right? It would be one.
Trip over them in airplane aisles.
It would be one nonstop ball punch
That's
your entire life. And you'd want to die. You'd end up with the Dr. Rob solution, and you'd jump headfirst into the demon core and hope you didn't even last 25 days.
It should also be pointed out that you've been kicked in the balls 3 times, and they haven't grown, so you've dodged a bullet.
Yeah.
3 times already.
So I would be going for radiation. I'd take the 20 sweet days and hot air balloon into oblivion. Someone in the back?
Chris Chow.
Linking back to the cannibalism episode, if your nuts were to grow so large, could you feed them to, like, hungry
cannibals.
That's kind of like operating on them. Post-mortem, you could. So if you wanted to gather together some large food source and then donate it after your death to starving children, then, you know.
Solving the world food crisis.
I don't think prairie oyster would be the right term for that.
Mm. Imagine
something even bigger than a prairie.
Imagine creating enough, you
continent
know.
Oysters.
Tundra oysters.
Tundra from Canada.
Solve the world food crisis. One fell ball.
Yes.
I just wanted to comment on the whole swelling issue. If you wanted to induce this within yourself, there's a tropical disease called lymphatic filariasis, and this is another worm.
Spell it for us.
Yes, worms.
It's named after Phil Oriasis, the famous Irish.
Ah, Phil Oriasis, of course.
I think it's with an F. I think it's F-I-L-I-A-R.
Accuracy. Listen to the show, accuracy is not my strong suit.
Anyhow, what this worm does is it lives in, it'll travel into your lymph vessels, and it'll create blockages, and you'll get these huge swellings all over your body. It causes elephantiasis, but testicles are definitely... one of the places that it likes to cause to get bigger. So, you know, if you really wanted to test this out, you could do that.
is this, what was the name of the?
Filariasis.
Is this filariasisdirect.com? Yes, another question.
No, I was thinking maybe you should do an audience poll to see the lesser of two evils.
That's a good idea.
Okay, that's a great idea.
Make you choose.
Okay.
So it's almost a good reminder.
By a show of hands, who would choose the giant, ever-expanding James and the Giant Peach scrotum?
Yay!
Wow, a lot of men.
Hold on, I'll do a head count. Hold on. We have 14 for the ball.
Okay. And who would take the demon core?
Much about twice as many.
Cowards all.
27.
Anyone like the combo pack?
So that means
I guess that's just me.
At any given time, 2/3 of any given population is smart enough to take radiation.
I would like to think it was my constant ball bumping that turned the tide.
That's a good point.
I think if we'd taken a poll before we made our arguments and take a poll after us, I would have switched. I would have flipped the switch on these people.
I don't often give you that, but you're totally right. You're absolutely right on that.
Woohoo!
So I'd like to thank our guests, Dr. Rob. Give him a hand. Dr. Jenna. And Dr. Stewie.
Yay.
Thank you.
Happy birthday, Stewie.
Happy birthday.
Hey. Thanks for coming, everybody. Have a good night.
To know you're alive is such an awful feeling. You die inside, and when you wake up, startled to say, I hope I don't go crazy.